The Talking About Organizations podcast recently released an episode covering Andrew Abbott's classic book, The System of Professions, an essay on the division of expert labor. In the second part, we discussed case studies of professions and professionalization, and contemporary challenges facing professions due to expansion of technology, growing distrust towards professional workers in some areas, and media coverage, all of which are challenging the autonomy and status of professionals and their work. We used public health as an example, but it is far from the only one. And the conversation has made me wonder what professions and professionalism will look like in the future, assuming it has one. My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. If you haven't listened to our conversation on Andrew Abbott, I really strongly encourage you to look up episode 67 because it's an extremely important topic nowadays in terms of the status and the viability of professions. If there was a general comment, and I don't want this to be a criticism, but a comment about Andrew Abbott's approach, he was really after trying to capture the competition between professions and was less interested in the ethical and the moral dimensions of professionalism. But for many of us who are professionals in some fashion, the moral dimension is extremely important. Under what reasons and what circumstances are professions being put under pressure? Outside of the fact that they do compete over their jurisdictions, the domains of expert knowledge that they control. So I wanted to do a quick follow-up on that episode and talk about the moral dimension here. First, of course, what I have to do is I have to define what I mean by moral dimension. This is basically taking the elements of Abbott, putting some sort of a moral component to it. And this is about, you know, why it is what motivates people to become professionals and what motivates professions to sustain their autonomy, apart from just the jurisdictional claims alone. So there were three areas, and I'm going to use the organization identity construct because I've used that frequently in this program. I think it's a really, really useful thought here. We can see two levels of claims, identity claims, and one is focused on the domain of expert knowledge. But then you add an additional layer of honor. So what do I mean by that? Let's just say, for example, the professional work. The straight Abbott model talks about diagnosis, inference, and treatment. So professions basically perform professional work by identifying causal factors to undesired conditions, providing a remedy, and the act of applying expertise, experience, you know, using that expert knowledge is that middle step of inference, which is the hard intellectual work that the professional performs. If you add honor to that, then it sort of brings in this important dimension of the appropriateness and the value that the professional work has on society writ large. And I think that this is something really critical because when I was a junior military officer and there were discussions about the profession, that was actually a big part of what was the motivating factor behind treating the military as a profession was the honor associated with the work. And in this case, we're talking about the way in which the military applies it, because militaries, for example, they apply violence to achieve political ends, but they do so within the confines of international law, the laws of land warfare, and the treaties, you know, the Geneva Conventions, etc. And so there's a character of the work that basically separates work that is considered honorable or serves an honorable purpose as opposed to others which are just basically, you know, providing a service which society may not as a whole need, want, desire, consider valuable. That's an important dimension. So the second one is calling. Abbott talks a little bit about how people enter the profession, but it's not central to his discussion of how professions compete with each other over jurisdictional claims. But the sense of calling is something that, as a school child, about, you know, when you ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, you say, I want to be a doctor. Why? Because we want to cure the sick. Why do you want to be a lawyer? Because I want to bring justice to this world. Those sorts of idealistic thought or almost romantic thought about what being a profession is about in terms of serving others, that really does, in fact, call a lot of people in to join a profession and to exercise professional work. It is a definite difference from, say, the way that Abbott discusses early works done in studying professionalization, where professions almost behaved like an exclusive group of those who had common knowledge, expert knowledge that they were going to hold control over and shut people out. You know, if we think about the honorable sense of why we have a profession and who joins them, there's sort of that moral factor of people joining for the purposes of service, which really renders a difference between those that are considered, you know, that a society might consider to be an honorable profession versus those that they don't. This also kind of gets into this aspect of how does society perceive the work being done, and the intentions and motivations of the individual doing the work. If they perceive that the, for example, the doctor is sacrificing themselves for the purposes of doing professional medical work, then they might be more likely to grant that doctor autonomy, as opposed to a profession where they don't necessarily see that same sense of calling, that same sense of selflessness as dedication to service. And then the third, that is the sense of honorable service to others, in which others being everybody in society, is the service provided to everybody? Is it fairly and equitably accessible? You know, we think about how we perceive and value medical care and how we get very, very anxious about notions that not everybody has the same access to it because of the laws, structures, insurance, or what have you, that preclude access or exclude access. Honorable service would mean that the service is provided to everybody in society equally and fairly in some fashion. So with those three elements, you know, we can talk about some things, you know, different pressures that are on professions nowadays. And there's two I want to talk about very, very quickly so I can set them aside and get to really the biggest one. First one is kind of like the obvious, which is that, you know, the professions come under pressure when they themselves mess up. You know, you have the individuals who commit crimes or commit more immoral acts or unethical acts and embarrass the profession as a whole. The military and the sexual harassment crisis. The irregulars in accounting that create major financial scandals that take down or severely hamper economies. Plagiarism in education. The present challenges against law enforcement because of police abuse or brutality. All of these are examples of sort of this unprofessional conduct. The remedy, I mean, we can almost use the, you know, sort of like the same professional work metaphor that Abbott uses on the profession itself. The treatment is very simple. Restore the basics, the basic identity of the profession. Do so through training, kicking out the violators, all sorts of, you know, internal look and try to get this fixed. Restore trust in society, that sort of a thing. Okay. The second pressure is one that we talk about in the talking about an organizations episode, and this is the laicization or democratization of the knowledge. So technology is really big on this, and we talked about technology such that can a computer essentially do what you had a human expert doing? At what point does the human start falling out of the loop? At what point do people just give up on expensive medical visits? It's where they have to wait weeks or months when they can just go onto a internet site that gives them all the information they need. That is, so long as they are truthful with themselves about what their symptoms are. Artificial intelligence that can think faster than a human expert. You know, those sorts of things are definitely there. And they do raise the question as to why do we continue to have professionals, you know, when the services can be provided in other means. Now, the pressure that this places is the ability for the field to sustain the top expertise, basically develop expertise over the course of a career, which is something that's very important because, you know, if you take away the ability for people to develop experience in performing professional work, which essentially happens if you take away the simple cases and just simply hand it to a computer, you don't develop the experience and then the high-end expertise isn't sustained. It isn't developed in new waves of experts in the same way. And what happens is that in addition to the jurisdiction eroding, there becomes a trust issue with whether or not the computers themselves are really replicating expert knowledge, or are the algorithms simply going in a completely different direction, and we don't understand why. If we're going to sustain expertise, then how do we ensure that there is this sort of pipeline of people who can continue to keep the domain of expertise viable? But the biggest one, which is really sort of the impetus behind this episode, is one in which the profession itself is just, or the idea of professionalism is repudiated. And this is called anti-professionalism, and there is a whole stream of anti-professional literature, which I've uncovered since recording the Abbott episode. I didn't realize how rich this was and how far this goes back. And anti-professionalism is sort of this notion of which you can see how the bureaucratization or the poor relationship with a society can damage the moral standing of the individual professional, can basically pervert the honorable calling to careerism, can pervert the notion of honorable work to just, you know, doing things by the numbers, can pervert the sense of honorable service, fairness, justice, equity to society to just simply favoring only certain individuals. Also, there's this opposition to what I might call the professional archetype. And this is the idea of professionals being elite, club member, rich, I mean, even perhaps a tool of oppression. What we're really talking about here is how anti-professionalism is a literature stream that talks about the erosion of a profession in such a way that societies not only distrust it, but they come to consider it a blight on society. Stanley Fish wrote this article, which seems to be kind of like the root. It's one that a lot of literature draws back on that references anti-professionalism. And it's just, that's what it's called, anti-professionalism. That's the entire title. And he defines it as an attitude or an argument that enforces a distinction between professional labors on the one hand and the identification and promotion of what is true or valuable on the other. The things that he talks about is as a way of trying to warn professions to maintain their moral dimension is really, really striking. And it really goes along the lines of the things that I discussed. The reduction of the profession to just a job. That was the root of how the United States Army initiated its professionalism studies around the turn of the century, the turn of the 21st century. It was the fear that the all-volunteer force was devolving away from its professional character and was becoming infected with careerism. Adversarial distances forming between professionals and their clients. The service is no longer a reward to itself, with the two sides seeing each other as mere commodities. That sort of thing happens when you have an erosion of the moral dimension of the professional work, where the professional ceases to care or be interested in the general affairs of the people that they're serving or the society writ large, which is how elitism can either come to be or can be perceived by society. If they see the profession as being self-serving, self-sustaining, and self-isolating. The result on the part of the professions is cynicism. It's dissatisfaction. It's leaving the profession in droves. what's going on presently with the public health crisis is, you know, as a result of the pandemic, was one of the reasons why we raised this during the Talking About Organizations episode, precisely because public health professionals, despite their best efforts to try to do their job, are being seen as an impediment or in the way or unhelpful. And the result is that quite a lot of them are, in fact, leaving, or a lot of medical professionals are frustrated with insurance professionals. There's a natural conflict there about who has the say over what is considered to be proper treatment or proper diagnostic work or all of that. It's certainly breeding cynicism because I hear it when I visit various doctors' office when they talk about it. So with those three pressures, I mean, there's a definite challenge, especially with this third pressure. There's definitely a challenge present because, you know, on the one hand, the professions are having to grapple with what can help them to sustain their autonomy, sustain control over their domain of expert knowledge. And on the other hand, what can keep them in a proper constructive light in with society. I certainly want to see is I actually believe much more in professionalism because I do believe that the moral dimension, while it is something that not everybody can aspire to or sustain, the aspiration to it, the idea of a calling to serve, of selflessness, of looking to benefit others in the society, are values that we should be cultivating, whether it's in a profession or otherwise. I just think that that is a necessary component of the society that we want to build. And if we want to build the right kind of society coming out of, say, this pandemic, especially, those are values that really are important. If we don't think about it, the types of pressures we're placing professions under is going to do the opposite. It's going to actually make it more difficult for people to want to exercise a calling or see the nobility of joining a profession. So some of the things that you know, we should think about, and I'm just going to leave it as a really quick list, is, you know, what do we mean by a calling? And how do we instill a sense of calling, not just in terms of the professions that are obviously tangibly beneficial to society and individuals, but other professional work that needs to be done in order to help get the society back on its feet? How do we rebuild trust between professions and the society? How do we build it in such a way that we can embrace and continue, leverage technologies rather than treat technologies as a threat to professionalism? Representation. One of the things that the military has been really, really big about in terms of its relations with the governments and the society at large is diversity and inclusion. You know, this whole sense that professions are an elitist club or fueled by the fact that a lot of professions are not as diverse as they could be. And that's very well demonstrated. So what can we do to encourage more diversity and inclusion in professions? The final item is collaboration rather than competition, but not to eliminate competition entirely, because obviously competition of ideas is certainly an important and good thing. But what I'm really talking about is competition between professions and the claims of jurisdiction, where exclusivity is the goal rather than better service to society. Honorable work, honorable calling, honorable service to others doesn't really stake much in terms of claims of this jurisdiction. It's all about the provision of service and the caring and of the society. What this tells me is that there's a point where competition needs to be set aside, especially in times of crisis such as now, and replaced with spirits of collaboration across professions. I can't say I know exactly how to do that, but you know, the fear is that crisis can often cause individuals and organizations to entrench, protect their turf when the opposite is really needed. And that opposite, I would call that the spirit of professionalism. That is adding the moral dimension back to the discourse about why we have professions and why we really, really need them, especially in times like now. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.